Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable panel and to our first post-election panel back in our confines of our studio. I just want to thank all the wonderful folks who came out for a very nice day yesterday as far as an event and a very nice program, and we thank everybody who participated. But it's nice to be back in the studio, and let me introduce our panel to you. We'll be talking about, what could we talk about? What possibly could we have to say? WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning. Good morning.
Why, hey, do me a favor there.
Oh, yeah.
There, thank
help.
You. There
yeah,
you go. Thank you. Director of the Journalism Program at the University at Albany, Rosemary Armeo, is here. Apparently she's being silent. Please don't do that for the rest of the show.
It's a limitation of Buster Keaton in the early days.
Talk shows work best when people talk.
Not all of them.
No, that's true. Good point, Ira. Daily Freeman publisher emeritus Ira Fussfeld joins us. Good morning, Ira.
Good morning. What's new?
Yeah. So, I think we mentioned this yesterday of what will it take for people to take to the streets? Well, they took to the streets. And this was something that we saw last night in cities throughout the country who were protesting the election results and with signs that said, not my president, and that this comes just hours after both Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama talked about the peaceful transfer of power, and even Donald Trump talking about the peaceful transfer of power. And yet, you have very angry, mostly young people that you have to wonder.
Did they vote?
Did they vote? But still, there they were in great numbers in cities, again, throughout the country, Chicago, New York, Los Angeles. And so I asked the panel of what you make of that and what does it say? And then ultimately, what could possibly come of it?
Well, look, the Republicans control the House of Representatives, the Senate, albeit by a smaller margin, and they control the White House now and probably soon the Supreme Court. So there are very few places that those who are going to protest the Trump administration are going to be able to go. And one of those places is the street. I mean, it's sort of like a balloon. You step on one side, the balloon extends on the other side. There are very few places that this is going to happen. Now, the real question is this going to be something which happens for a few days and then there's burnout and people go back and shut up? Or is this going to be the beginning of something much bigger? I don't know.
Well, it's unlikely to be something that's carried out in the Trump administration, which seems to love the Second Amendment best. We do still have a First Amendment, and one of the five rights in that amendment is the right to assemble. So a protest in the streets was completely peaceful and totally within the rights of citizens. My first thought was, well, get it out of your system now while we got Obama in office, because that sort of demonstration, if it continues, would be the sort of catalyst for a crackdown under a law and order president, even the declaration of martial law, if it got really serious, if it got out of hand.
Yes, I agree. I couldn't help but think about the irony that in the days leading up to the election, we were anticipating Hillary was going to win. And in the wake of that, we were anticipating two things. One, that Trump would not come out and concede. And two, that his supporters would go out on the street carrying their weapons and protest. And instead, what did we get? We got Hillary not coming out to concede until 12 hours later. And we got the protest that we saw last night. I read the protests as a calling card. I think that they needed to get out there last night and let folks know that there is that large segment of this population that is not happy with the result and is going to be watching and to see what happens. I don't think they're going to be protesting every night, but I think that they will be if their worst fears are imagined in a Trump administration.
When you think of what happened earlier in the day, both from the president, and I will include Donald Trump in this, although we did discuss this yesterday and the rest happened afterwards, but
President Obama, Hillary Clinton, I do want to talk about their speeches and what your thoughts were about what they had to say.
I thought Hillary's speech was quite good. It was really very well delivered, and it was emotional, and it was pointed and hit on all the right notes. But as I say, and I hadn't heard, I didn't stay up past 1 o'clock on election night, so I didn't, and obviously didn't hear all the commentary. And then I listened to much of yesterday's program, and it wasn't until near the end when Rosemary brought up the point that, A, apparently Lewandowski criticized Hillary for not coming out to speak to her supporters on election night, and then you were saying the same thing, and I think I heard you agree with me, which is it was, I thought, despicable that she did not do that, that you had thousands of people in that Javits Center waiting to hear from her. She had she sent Podesta out saying, in effect, let's wait till all the votes were counted, while at the same time she was calling Trump to concede.
Yes.
And I believe she owed it to her supporters who sat there, and she owed it to the country to do what she did yesterday morning. I have nothing to criticize about what she said yesterday other than it was 12 hours late.
Yeah, I agree.
It was, and it seemed, I mean, given the timing of it, of you send Podesta out and then 5-10 minutes mm-hmm. later you call Trump. I mean, there have been some statements as to, you know, state of mind and how she would have looked, and you know, did she sort of have it together yet, ready to do that? But regardless, you have that obligation, right?
And there was also, you know, they were talking about how Hillary and the Democrats were blindsided by the results. But if you want to read the tea leaves, what time of day did they cancel the fireworks demonstration?
By 9:15, it was evident that would have given her
9:15 a.m.
No, that's true when they canceled. But even when the results began coming in at 9:15 p.m., and so she still had 5 hours to write it. And I think she wanted pageantry, and she wanted a prime time airing spot. If you looked at him, and others have noted this, she wore purple. Bill and Tim Kaine both had purple ties, which is the color of royalty and mourning, an interesting combination.
And they waited, until California could be brought in, as Joe pointed out yesterday, for her. She was supposed to talk at 9:30, then 10:30, then at 11:30, finally got around to doing it.
So, and then we go to the President of the United States, who spoke just a few minutes after Hillary Clinton and came out into the Rose Garden with the Vice President, who only said a word or two, which was the moment of levity in the proceedings. But again, talking about the peaceful transfer of power. And what do you think he had to say? And did he say what he had to say?
Well, he said it very quickly. I'll tell you that much. It was not an expansive speech. But he was a guy who really has doubled down on the peaceful transference of power.
Yeah, I mean, I hate this idea that it had to be of a certain length or it had to have a certain sentiment. He did what had to be done. He's already on the record multiple times enthusiastically saying that Trump is incompetent for the office. But now, you know, that's the way it works. He's going to invite him to the White House today. There'll be a peaceful transfer, and he will do his duty, as must we all.
What time does that happen?
I'm sorry, Brian.
I think it's 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
I was incredibly interested in the stats that have come out concerning who voted and how much they voted for and what groups turned out. Ira, you were telling me something on the way in here about Hispanic voters.
Yeah, I thought I saw one chart that said that he got 30% of the Hispanic vote, which stunned me. Trump did. I saw another stat.
In Florida, right?
Was it Justin? Yes, that's correct, Florida.
Justin Florida.
But I believe that's a large, everybody was
banking on it. 28.6 in Florida.
Right, and everybody was saying that the early turnout by the Hispanics was an indication that he was going to win Hillary was going to win that state. The other statistic that startled me, and I don't know if it was a nationwide statistic, was that he received the majority of votes among college-educated white women. College-educated white women.
I cannot. More than 20 million women voted for Donald Trump.
It's startling.
Well, I mean, I totally was on the other side, so I am working hard to adjust to this.
Well, as I point,
and they let me say one last thing, and then I'll shut up. What those women are saying is that they discounted all that he said, and are looking instead for jobs and trade agreements that will favor the working class here. And so I am trying to see the positive in that a group that has not formally had a big voice in government will have it now. I hope that those women get what they voted for. I hope that it works
economically.
Out.
Economically.
I hope that they are right in that it was only words and that we won't see actions and that we will see movement and jobs and a change in the economy, although I thought it was pretty good under I can't resist saying, under the present administration. However, the people have spoken. We get the leader we deserve, and that's it. That's
the
bottom line.
The people spoke, but the Electoral College spoke the loudest because, of course, Hillary had more votes than he did.
I have all through the primaries, when Hillary used that to her advantage, said, you know the rules and you play by them. And the Republicans did that well, as they did with Al Gore. And so you live with it. We had the opportunity and have never taken it up to now, and I don't see a movement for it now to change the Electoral College, and we have not.
Well, I think the only thing that those of us who did not want to see this guy elected can hope for, and it's really, you know, maybe spitting in the wind, is that we don't know who he is. For all the coverage he had, we think he's a misogynist. He's certainly enough evidence of that. We think he's a racist. We think there's certainly enough evidence of that. But we don't know what he is going to do policy-wise until he actually does it. And there is also the suggestion that this guy was a Democrat until he was not a Democrat, that his interest is not in policy. His interest is in building things and getting things done and making deals. And so we need now, even the protesters last night need to say to this guy, all right, show us what you're going to do.
I will edit that only slightly, Ira. We don't think he's a racist and a misogynist. Mm-hmm. His actions and his repeated words show that he is. Mm-hmm. The question is, can a racist, misogynist, all the other bigotry things you can turn to him, also do some good? NPR has been spending a lot of time talking about a plan to put people to work at least for a couple years doing infrastructure. That would be good. Applauds to him. Barack Obama espoused that and couldn't get it through.
Tried to do
it. He can. So there is good that can come from it, despite his being a bigoted. Mm-hmm. Not that we don't know whether he is. We do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was moved yesterday, but listening to Barbara Smith and to Libby, I mean, their own particular issues, you know, two of the four of us in this room are Jewish, and although I'm not a real religious Jew, there are anti-Semitic overtones to Trump's campaign. So there are those things that are worth fearing, more than worth fearing. We are legitimately fearing, and all we can do is hope that somehow those social concerns are suppressed, and that Trump and the Republicans can govern and move this country forward. And that's what I think Obama was trying to express yesterday. I mean, it must have killed Obama to give that speech yesterday. And here's a guy who denied his birthright and et cetera throughout his presidency. And now all of a sudden he's got to welcome this guy as his successor, who is going to probably undo everything that he accomplished. But nevertheless, Obama, not surprisingly, said the right things. Let's give this guy a chance. Let's work with him. I didn't agree with George W. Bush, but he welcomed me to the White House, that sort of thing. It's all we can do now.
Let's go to a couple letters before we go to a break at the bottom of the hour with news.
Joe, our friend Judy, who we love so much, said, referring to your interview, I think, with Ross Chast, dear panel, can't we do something more pleasant? Let's talk about something more pleasant.
Oh, I think she's just referencing the title of the book, right?
Yeah, okay, yeah, that's right. Good morning, panel. Take heart. Trump will only be in for one term. He won't want to work as hard as most politicians. His life will not be his own. No golf, tanning, booths, etc. His time will be managed in 30-minute increments, and he will not like it. And that's from Kevin.
You are dreaming.
Yeah, but
get ready for an 8-year term and then spinoffs, including Pence and his own son. This will go on for a while, and there's plenty of time to golf. George Bush proved that. That's just not true.
Dear panel, a significant portion of your catchment area supported Donald Trump in the recent election, but your panel was and has been unable to find anyone to sit and discuss the Trump point of view. Would you please consider reducing the number of left-leaning panelists and adding a few, or at least one, that could represent an opposing point of view?
I think that's really legitimate.
Okay, and so let me say, since that we're, and I know Joe agrees with this, we're always willing to take nominations. In other words, if somebody has somebody that they think could be amenable, could fit into the panel, could be civil, we're always willing to consider that. Right, Joe?
Yes.
But absolutely. One of the criticisms that the media writ large has received is that it did not hear enough voices in its coverage from those people who supported Trump and who ultimately swayed the election.
And that may be because those people didn't want to talk.
Well, it may be because also that in the case of the print press, there are not either they didn't see it and or they didn't have enough people to go out into the boonies and knock on doors.
I think there were lots of stories. The Washington Post, the
about
New York
Trump.
Times, about people in the hinterland, yeah. In the Rust Belt, who were his major supporters, people in rural areas. The problem was the press decided that his incompetence and inexperience overwhelmed that surely people would, even those angry at the establishment and looking to upset everything and turn out the rascals would consider his great inappropriateness for the office. They did not. And that is the mistake that the media made.
But if they, and I'm not disagreeing that there were stories from the hinterlands, but I don't think if there were and they were significant enough, nevertheless, the press did not fully appreciate the impact and size of that group of people on the election.
I tend to agree with Ira on that. I do. And I think there's one more point here, and that is that many of the people who were missed here, who voted for Trump and who made him the president, didn't really want to talk to pollsters. They didn't want to talk to their mothers about it. They just went out there and they voted because they were angry. And I think that's part of it.
But I don't think that this was not like when a reporter knocks on the door of somebody's house right after their son dies and say, how do you feel? I think people would have talked to the press to express why that they felt that a Donald Trump presidency made sense to them.
I just have to intercede. I think the press totally appreciated that. If nothing else, Bernie Sanders' campaign showed it. And they did write about it and they did talk about it. What does it mean to appreciate it? What more can we do except write articles?
Well, then if that's the case, then the coverage would not have reflected the surprise of his election. In other words, if the press was out there talking to enough people to fully appreciate how many people were in favor of Trump, there would not have been headlines that said a stunner.
And again, I will say that the polls and the press always talked about how close it was. Why if Trump were so incompetent, why wasn't Hillary further ahead? We went into all of that.
Right.
I think.
I gotta take a break. I'm sorry.
Oh,
no, that's all right.
That's
Thank
good.
You. We'll be right back. We'll continue our conversations. We'll continue the letters. We have a lot of those. Panel@WAMC.org. All right. Alan has a stack of letters, so let's go to those first, and then we'll move on with other topics, and I'm sure we'll discuss many other things as we go through the course of the letters.
Joe, just let me take one second, a personal second, to thank you for what you did yesterday. Your running of the 2-hour session on the roundtable,
our group therapy session
at the Linda was superb.
Well, thank you, very much.
You would do a great job.
Thank you.
Okay, Jennifer says, will you please review what you think the media could or should have done differently during the campaign season? Were their key assumptions poor ones, or did good, even important principles, simply not serve us well in this situation? That's Jennifer from West Hartford. But I will say, folks, that you should listen to the Media Project this week, starring Rex and Ira Fussfeld, in which we discuss those very questions. You want to give a synopsis, Ira?
Well, I'd be happy to restate my always accurate and cogent point of view. I just think that after every election, there is significant nasal gazing on the part of the press about what it did right and what it did wrong. I think the press is being overly hard on itself. The print press is being overly hard on itself. As Rosemary pointed out, the major news organizations covered Trump very well. You should know everything you need to know about Trump from reading the newspapers. I think that the primary shortfall, in my view, as expressed previously, was not having its pulse on the large group of non-educated whites who apparently swayed the election. But I do think, generally speaking, the press is being too hard on itself. But also, whether it's this election or prior elections, there is too much horse race coverage. There's too much reliance on the polls, and it takes away from issue-based coverage, in my view.
Well, that is so sure. And let me just say that reading the New York Times every day, as I did. Now, look, I predicted that Trump was going to win, but I wasn't for Trump. People are making that assumption. That's ridiculous. But every day, for reassurance, I would look at Nate Silver and the New York Times, and I would see what the percentages were. And I never understood the idea. How could you have 90% in some cases a chance of Hillary winning, 10%, and then you look at the national polls and you see 1% right. and 2%? I never got that. Right. I never understood it.
We talked about that multiple times here, that what did these polls really mean? So that is an I would fault the press for an absolute, oh, my God. They were so stuck on the emails. It was the only thing covered. Do you remember the commander-in-chief interview with Matt Lauer? And every question to Hillary Clinton until the audience took over was about emails, which is not exactly the same as how you would be commander-in-chief.
But that was a broadcast interview. I would suggest that issue was covered in the press, but the broadcast went way too far.
Ira, the media is all of that. We can't separate
one
from
the other.
We
have to separate it. It's imperative now more than ever that we separate it, because there is so much media. People have to be aware of where they're getting their information, what the source is, what the reliability of that media organization is.
The press, as you define it, is going away.
Well, there's
I'm
no
sorry.
Doubt about
you're
it.
Evidence
you're,
of that.
You're absolutely
so
correct.
So is Stu, so is Rex. Yep. We are proof of that.
No doubt.
So, but can you go way, 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 way back to at least 4 months prior to that, or 5 months prior to that, or 8 months prior to that, when, yes, even the print press, but certainly the cable news networks were giving Donald Trump, because he was saying outrageous things, and they were just putting on those rallies, and forget Hillary Clinton for a moment, but they weren't covering a Jeb Bush rally, they weren't covering a Marco Rubio rally, they weren't covering a John Kasich rally, they were only covering Donald Trump. They weren't covering Martin O'Malley, they weren't covering Bernie Sanders, they weren't covering Hillary Clinton.
And that was all about money.
And that was right. It was eyeballs on the sets, and the same thing with the print press. They were printing article after article because he was saying outrageous things, and as Alan so often says, throwing red meat.
Yeah, but I think the print...
And that went on.
Yeah, but you know, our friend David Letterman used to joke when he would fool around with his tie on TV. He would just move his tie around and stare at the screen, and he'd say, I'm the only thing on CBS
yes,
right now.
Yes, that's right.
Well, that's one of the inherent difficulties about broadcast is you can only show one thing at once. The print press may well have been covering Trump as significantly as the cable press, but it was also doing lots of other things. There was chewing gum and walking at the same time.
No, I agree with that, but that came a lot later after sort of the die had been cast, I believe. I think as that came as it became clear that as he started to win primaries, and once the print mm-hmm. press got off the campaign trail and they weren't covering 32 candidates, that they were suddenly covering Donald Trump.
Yeah, but plenty of time though. There was time to do that. At the beginning.
I know, but he'd already been built up. He'd already given so much airtime. Right?
Airtime versus print time.
One of the interesting things, talk about the press and our definition of what the press is we had a fascinating conversation on the Media Project today in which Rex really went after, I think it's fair to say, Ira, the social media. And said that there's got to be more internal control.
Well, he was specifically talking about Facebook and whether or not Facebook should be controlling more of what it's putting out there, because so much fake news is getting out.
Well, it's very hard to know how they could do that. All I know is I blocked everybody except my kids and my wife and a few other people. You, Ira, and a few other people. And
you allowed Ira or blocked Ira?
No, I'm I know all about Murray's dog and Alan's grandchildren. Okay. I know all about Rosemary's grandchildren.
So how do you
and
do
they
that?
Mine.
If
so.
I say my grandson is the best grandson in the whole world.
I have a granddaughter, so you can make that.
Yes, but that was the origin of Facebook as in the simpler times. That was Facebook.
What are they going to do? Have the Wizard of Oz?
Oh, it's to pick
up
girls.
Oh, that's right. Well, that, according to the movie, that's yeah. Right. And then they banned the soccer team for doing the same thing. Yeah.
Well, anyway, I think that there's a certain amount of competition that goes on between the print media and some of the new replacements.
It's a competition for sure. In that a lot of the social media is taking advertising dollars away, but on the other hand, the social media is encouraging people to come to individual media outlet sites by directing them there. So it goes both ways.
Yeah. So Zach, there are many ways to exercise our democratic rights, and voting is just one of them. Kudos to the folks in the street.
All right.
Dear Alan, Joe, and panel, yesterday was a dark day. The election results were horrifying. I don't think anything could be worse than 8 long years of Bush, but sadly, I was proven wrong. I need some solace, and my son, whom I homeschool, needed it too. WMC is part of our family. You entertain, inform, and at times when needed, give great comfort. Yesterday was no exception. It was like being at a wake, a great deal of sadness, but comforted by knowing we were not alone in our grief. And that's from Bob and Truth.
Did you happen to see the Stephen Colbert show that he did on Showtime? Did you see that, Joe?
It was a mess.
It was a mess, but it was a mess because they didn't think that Hillary was going to lose. And as it became clear in real time that Trump was winning, the reason I'm thinking about it is the writer just said the word wake. It seemed like a wake on that program. It was the oddest quote-unquote comedy show you'll ever want to see.
Because they had set bits that were ready for her to win. And they tried to go with them even though it was becoming more and more clear that that Donald Trump was winning and going to win. And then the guests were really the ones who brought it into
He had Halpern and Heilman on, and they were reporting in real time looking at their cell phones that Florida has lost, and you could hear the groans from the audience.
And you could just see the color drain out of Colbert's face.
He gave a monologue near the end that I actually think much of which was extemporaneous.
Sure,
because it was gloomy. He didn't know what to say. He was looking around trying to pull the right words out.
David says, yesterday, someone in the audience suggested we need more major parties rather than our two major ones. This creates a problem that can only be solved by amending the Constitution. Most people don't realize that if no candidate gets at least 270 electoral votes, then the president is chosen by the House of Representatives. And each state only gets one vote. This means that South Dakota has as much sway as California. That hardly makes things more democratic.
Has there been any investigation yet as to what impact, if any, Johnson had on the result? I mean, I believe he got 3 million votes. Does that sound right?
I mean, there's certainly those who are saying that in very close areas and even in districts that there was a spoiler effect there. Mm-hmm. But just a quick note from our wonderful producer, Sarah LaDuke, who is reminding our letter writers to just keep your letters short. Sentence
how
or
many,
two.
How many characters did you say?
Well, 140 characters, which is 140 letters, not 140 words.
Yeah.
Just so you know. And so if you want to be considered and have it printed, please make them short and just get right to the point.
It's very hard to keep to 142 characters. Well, that's Twitter you're talking about.
Well, yeah, but that's what we've always said.
Well, yes,
here,
and we always
right?
said.
We've said, but we don't enforce it the way Twitter does.
Well, now we're going to start.
No, but we're just saying we want to get to as many letters as possible.
Yes. So that
I'm not saying we're counting characters, Rosemary. We're not.
You know, I've been doing this show with Rosemary a long time. She's also in the doldrums. I can just see there's
a
real...
No. I admit it, and I also realize that I stated an opinion that has been squelched by the voters. I need to...
By
I feel like
voters.
David Cameron.
by some voters, not by all the voters.
No, most of the voters agreed with you.
Most of the voters around here did.
Not the ones who count it, though.
Yeah.
Well, that's a whole other story.
Yep.
Okay. Do you, panel, do you think that the results of the recent election will put the right-wing media, Fox News, Ann Coulter, Sarah Palin, Limbaugh, and the like, out of business? Their enemies have been vanquished.
Well, they did okay for 8 years during the Bush administration, so I think they'll be fine here, too, won't they?
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see if there is a intramural war between the right-wing media.
Well, you know, Ira, there always has been. And here's, as I have said, and Rose, you credited me with a little while ago, it's all about red meat. The more red meat. And so the problem with these guys are that, let's say you got, you know, Rush Limbaugh, and then you got a competitor, and their competitor says, I have to be more crazy than him to get more listeners. That's what happens. More red meat, please. Claude says, since it appears so many polls were wrong, could the election results, in fact, have been hacked?
I have already said that I hope the media will look into that. There were indications that elections in several states were vulnerable, and I hope the media does look into it and check on it. But I don't expect it to have any more effect than the reporting on Chad's did in 2000.
Yeah, but I don't know about individual states. I haven't looked at that. But the popular vote, which was often the most quoted poll, had Hillary up at the end roughly 3 points, generally speaking. Inside, they would always say, the margin of error. Well, she won slightly, was 0.2 mm-hmm. or whatever. So the polls, if you buy the inside the margin of error, were not wrong.
I said that yesterday and was immediately shouted down.
Oh, is that right?
By other panelists who said, yeah, but they never put Hillary behind.
That's correct. A couple of national polls did.
Well, there was the notable Washington Post poll, which at one point had her down up 12, and then all of a sudden after the Comey letter, she was down 1, but then it came back up
to
4
or 5. And then Los Angeles, right?
Los Angeles was an outlier, and I read the Los Angeles Times online, and I haven't read their analysis of the after the results, but they did say on election day, we're going to find out if our poll is right because we know we were an outlier. And the reason we were an outlier is that we weighted the information we had differently than did the others.
Yeah, well, that's what it's all about.
But that, I think, speaks again to my criticism of the press relying too much on the polls in covering the election.
Catherine says, I never thought I could agree with Trump, but I do believe this election. Did I just read that? The election was rigged.
Yes.
The gerrymandering by the Republicans after the 2010 census has given the advantage to the GOP in states such as Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and others.
So who rigged the election? Putin?
No, the system has problems, and they're really deep. It goes to gerrymandering. It goes to the way votes are counted. I do think that this is something that the press should be looking into really a lot in the coming year. And that's not with a view to outing Trump. I don't think that would or should happen, but just to reforms in the political system.
And by the way, as I read these letters, I just want everybody to know we do not censor letters. If they are germane and if they are substantive, we read them. So when you say the other side never comes up around here, that's just wrong. I mean, we try to make sure that everybody does it. Now, Andre says, what basis do you have for assuming the younger generation didn't vote?
Statistics on who voted.
Yep.
can we get – I'm reading the letters as you go along. There's about a billion here on me attacking Hillary because she wore purple. I didn't attack her.
No, of course you didn't.
The idea of what purple represents came from Vanity Fair, which is like a major expert on fashion. It stands for royalty. It stands for mourning. There are other meanings which some listeners are writing in about. Not an attack.
Yeah, listen –
I love her. I'm in mourning.
You're okay. To the panel, what about the vandalism associated with the protest marches? Some on the left in the USA might have to do some soul searching. They may have to look in the mirror and realize that to enough of the population, they made Trump look like a centrist. Yes, I do hold a degree. No, I did not vote for Trump, and nor look forward to his administration. That's from Ramon.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back. We have to pay some bills. We'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We have Alan Chartok. We have Rosemary Arameo. We have Ira Fussfeld. And, of course, your letters, and we'll continue with those right now.
Hi, panel.
Hi, panel. Hi. Hello.
Let's pick it up. Now that there's nothing more to lose, could President Obama put in Garland as a recess appointment? No. How would that work? It wouldn't. Thanks for being there. Fruitless.
I think I heard yesterday it was already fruitless. Dead. Yeah. I mean, they've sort of, it's done.
They're not going to let him in now.
Yeah.
He's now a historical footnote.
Just everybody pray for the good health of Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Oh, yeah. I want her to live to 100.
Yeah.
Good morning, panel. Let's hope the pollsters and pundits keep getting it wrong. They were wrong that Trump was doomed after his announcement speech. They were wrong that he would be the Republican nominee. And they were wrong that he would be president. Maybe they will be wrong again that a Trump presidency will doom our country. At least I hope so. And that's Cody from Greenfield, Massachusetts.
All right.
Rosemary just said purple is the color of royalty and dignity. True, it is also the color when you blend red and blue together. You get purple. Okay.
Right.
All right.
I think you, yeah.
Roger says, for outright incompetence, outrageousness, or pending legal appeals, Trump will likely not remain in office long, perhaps resigning. A rather ingenuous way of putting the presidency in the hands of a real right-wing ideologue, either de facto or by name as well, who almost certainly would not have made it to the White House on his own. Was this the plan all around? And his letter is titled President Pence.
You think Ted Cruz is feeling good these days?
No.
He's at the back of the line again.
Okay, so let me ask you, panelists.
He's like Prince Harry.
Prince Harry, yeah.
Well, I love Prince Harry and what he's doing. In the meantime, I have a question for all of you. As panelists, just discuss, if you can, for a second. Would you rather see Pence as president than Trump?
No.
I don't know. I think that there is a part of Trump that is going to get stuff done that may be beneficial. But I'm fearful of the downside. And I think Pence probably shares most of Trump's views socially, so at least as expressed socially that we discussed earlier. So.
And Rosemary, on top of your no, was there any?
Yeah, Mike Pence is a right-wing ideologue. His only accomplishment, his only goal, it seems, in public office in both Indiana and in Congress has been to defund Planned Parenthood and tromp on gay rights.
I just want to, real quick, I mentioned this yesterday, but I'll mention it again. A lot of people are writing this morning asking about Rich Honan. Rich is with us. Rich will be on the show on Tuesday. He had a family business that he attended to in Florida and was away, and he's back. And he will be with us on Tuesday morning. People think there's some sort of concerted plot that we, put him in a closet.
They think that about Rosemary when she doesn't show up.
But Rich is very much with us. Trust me, he has a lot to say. I think all of us, I know Rosemary and I have both reached out and talked to him. So he's ready to come back. He'll be with us Tuesday morning, and we couldn't be more thrilled. So.
But there's no
conspiracy theory there other than he wasn't available.
Yes, and the decision not to be here was his. Just like when Rosemary goes away and travels, it's hers, and we get the same kinds of letters like, "Why did you murder Rosemary?" And why did you?
We
do
don't.
That?
They don't miss me when I'm not here.
We do.
Oh, yes, they do.
We do. Yeah. Good morning, panel.
Good morning.
I read an interesting state-by-state likely a voter analysis in the theoretical Sanders versus Trump race. Sanders beat HRC in the critical states that Trump flipped, Wisconsin and Michigan, and based on exit polling would likely have won Ohio and Penn. So as well as both Trump and Sanders won with many of the same white male, less educators, added to the solid blue states would have given Sanders a decisive win. Your thoughts? Hey, as Alphonse D'Amato once said, that was then and this is now, and we have no way of knowing.
You mean whether or not Sanders would have done better than Bernie?
Yeah, yes.
Well, but Sanders never had to undergo the withering Trump treatment. I mean, the campaign, as divisive as it was with Hillary, was not nearly the kind of campaign he would have experienced with Trump.
I agree with that. John says, the last few days, especially evident during the live event, Rosemary has moved to the center and really provide a nuanced view of what's going on, despite overwhelming peer pressure to turn the election into purely motivated by bigotry. Is it just not having Rich Honan on to push our button?
No, you know, that is crap. I have always been a centrist. It's why I've been a supporter of Hillary Clinton. I do like the establishment. I do like having competent and experienced people in. I do believe in compromise and governance. I am a centrist and fail to see what's wrong with that. That's been the strength of our country for years.
And while you're on it, we heard from Elias, who says, Rosemary, why do you think Trump will win a second term? I don't see it.
Because incumbents have an inherent ability to win a second term. He has, while he is incompetent, he has around him a group of people who are odious and bigoted and yet very competent in governance. And I do think that he has what Obama never did, which is that's actually not true because he did in his first couple of years. He has a Congress who will push some popular programs, which I am grateful for. I think infrastructure is something that does need look. Obama thought that. Now it could actually be done. Gridlock is over. So he is going to have, if he can avoid a war, he will have something to point back to after 4 years. So he could win again.
Well, the other thing is I know people on the left were saying that about George W. Bush. It was going to be a one term, especially considering he lost in the popular vote and with the whole recall, and it would only be a one term. And that obviously turned out to be a two term presidency. You have no idea what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
we could have a recession and then it all bets
well, three
are
months
off.
Later, it was 9/11. So, right. I mean, we have right. You have no idea what's going to happen.
Exactly. So I would hope for a one term. I hope for no term. Now I'll hope for a 4 year term. But I surely am not counting on it.
OK, really fast, Joe. I know you got to go. Do Nate Silver, the Times Upshot and the Princeton Election Consortium have any credibility left?
Boy, I don't think
badly
so.
Badly hurt, as is the press as a whole. The press did cover and written and broadcast covered some really major stories about corruption by Donald Trump, and they were discounted, and major stories about his sexual predation, and they were discounted. We do not have credibility.
They were discounted by who?
The voters,
by
obviously.
The voters, those stories. You can't. I mean, you and I know. All we can do is print this stuff. The stories were covered. I thought the press did a good job. Again, I'll say it again. I just think there was too much reliance on polls, not to their benefit.
We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. Panel at WAMC.org, and we'll be back after this break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Shartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Ira Fussfeld make up our group this morning. We have a half hour left for you, and we would love to hear from you. Panel at WAMC.org. It seems like we've been clarifying all morning, and I apologize for this, but we've just been getting a lot of letters on this, too. So we made the thing about the 140 characters. And then we've got just a slew of letters of people saying that that's not fair, and that they should be able to write whatever we want to write. And yeah, you can write as much as you want. Just we won't be able to put it on the air if it's too long.
Sure.
The whole point of it was, all we were trying to say is that we want to get to as many letters as possible. And if you keep it very brief, we'll be able to get it on the air. You can write us 97 pages. That's fine. We just won't be able to read it on the radio.
So some guy went on and on yesterday's Vox Pop, post-election Vox Pop. And last night I got the meanest letter saying, so what that everybody else can't get on? I want to be able to talk as long as I want to be able to talk. That's the way people are.
People used to complain that we edited letters to the editor, and we naturally edited them for space and for libel et cetera. And I said, I used to tell people, did it ever amaze you that every letter that was in Time magazine was only one paragraph?
Yeah, sure. Sure.
That's good.
Let's go to some letters. Sure.
Okay. Good morning. What is your opinion on first 100-day plan in terms of feasibility? How to cut taxes and increase military spending simultaneously comes to mind. Well, you know, nature abhors a vacuum. If you cut taxes and you increase military spending, then you got to take it from balance the budget, by the way. Then you got to take it from somewhere else. And
goodbye Planned Parenthood, goodbye Department of Education.
Goodbye National Public Radio.
Entitlements are really new. Remember the Paul Ryan budget? Remember
sure.
We thought that?
Well, and we're going to see it again,
welcome
by the
back.
Way.
Yeah. What is there a Trump stand? Did he ever take one on Social Security?
I do believe Ryan has taken a stand on Social
Which is
Security,
what?
Which is basically to change it in such a way that, as I remember it, to change it in such a way as you put additional burdens on Social Security recipients, perhaps raise the age, perhaps who gives the money, whether people should spend more when they're getting their Social Security and their Social Security check. I don't remember all of them, but yeah. Do I think that it's possible that this group emboldened might do something to Social Security? I do.
So, I mean, I am looking for guidance on this, as I think others are. If you are eligible for Social Security, there is an impetus to wait.
Sure.
Because the longer you wait, you get as much as a 33% boost in benefits. But if it's endangered, wouldn't you be better off signing up now?
I'm hardly a CPA.
I know. And
I don't know about
It's all still up in the air. But
yeah, but I would think, considering what I know of Ryan and I know of the past Ryan budgets, I'd grab it.
Can we talk, before you go back to the next letter, about the just to dispel any the latest? It's not really a conspiracy theory. I mean, it could happen, and that is the faithless voter in the Electoral College. Meaning that there is the way that Hillary Clinton could still become president if those, because I believe we have one elector who is a Trump elector, who said that he'll be voting for, I think from Texas, who said he'll be voting for Donald Trump. So
he's a Trump elector.
We'll be voting for Hillary Clinton. So the question is that if there was a movement among those sent to the Electoral College, although from my understanding, it's only there are 26 states that ban it. So it would have to be in the other 24. And you would need an awful lot of infrastructure to make that happen. It seems to be something that just could not occur.
Waste of time.
Well, as you know, it's a waste of time.
It's a tinfoil hat.
As you know, I believe when Harry Truman ran, somebody has to look this up for us, but when Harry Truman ran, there was a delegate, an elector who said no, that he wouldn't vote for, he would not vote for Harry Truman. And remember, there were the Dixiecrats at the time, and you all remember that, or are you old enough to do that?
I think so. I mean, and there have been in the past. I mean, and we even saw it in the 2000 election, and we saw it in the 2004 election with John Kerry, where we saw that as well, where one or two. But you're talking about, how many?
He won by 60 or so.
Right. I mean, you would have to have 70 or 80 people. That would be an infrastructure. There have always been some rogue people, and again, I believe they're called faithless electors.
And you know how they get appointed, right? These are people who are honored by making them into electors. So you take your big donors and you take other people and you make them into electors and they turn out
to Washington. It's a whole junket kind of deal.
Sure.
All right, let's go back to the letters.
Okay, good morning. Is your opinion on first 100-day plan? Oh, you did that. Thank you very much.
You know, I went back do you remember this at the early in the campaign, the Boston Globe as an editorial ran a front page of the first day of the Trump administration. The headline at the top was Deportations Begin.
Right.
Also, new libel laws proposed. And of course, this was intended as a please don't vote for this man thing. Well, that call has been not heeded, but it made me wonder how accurate it would be.
In the eyes of the new president, where is the incentive to improve the education system and the cost of higher education now? And that's from Scott. Well, we know where Hillary was on that, and we know what Trump is thinking about in terms of trimming the major cabinet posts. And one of those, of course, is the Department of Education. And it's been a mantra for years for Republicans to abolish the Department of Education.
A friend talked to me about why was it that we saw so little during the campaigning from educational leaders, heads of colleges and university presidents speaking out. We really did not.
I can't.
I think he's right about that.
Come on, guys. Gerrymandering can't affect the presidential vote count. It affects the House district. We knew that. though. So maybe if the presidential race goes there, but otherwise, I don't think so.
Now, we were talking about political corruption and the reforms that are needed. And my point was that the system from top to bottom could use an overhaul, and it starts with gerrymandering is part of it at the bottom. No, you're right. It doesn't have anything to do with the presidency directly.
I remember, says Mark, busloads of excited Obama supporters heading from Mid-Hudson Valley to Pennsylvania to support Obama 2008. None of that this year. Isn't that a problem? I don't know.
No.
I don't know that this is true.
It isn't true. Albany sent people to Scranton. A friend of mine from Virginia spent days in Pennsylvania. That just isn't true. What this election showed, is that having money for ads and building a ground game is not so important when you have a celebrity candidate who gets free airtime.
To your point, I think you're absolutely right, because I've been hearing about how it has less to do in our modern age
right.
of campaigning, and I don't think that's true. I think if you had somebody who didn't have that star power and who wasn't a known entity the minute he hit the stage, it's because you're going to go back. If anybody else has to go through that, they're going to have that, that ground game.
I keep thinking about the things that Trump said about Hillary and about his competitors in the primaries. He had no outward limit, right? I mean, he would say lying this, small this, and the real question to me is whether or not that changes now that he's, Mario always used to say you campaign in poetry and you govern in prose. And so one will see whether that's the case here. Anyway, Lisa says, a large part of Hillary's votes came from young people. I'm sure it must have been hard for them, considering that Hillary stood for war with Russia, Russian propaganda, TPP, fracking, bank self-regulation, etc. Stop putting down young people.
If I remember the numbers correctly, Trump received about or a little bit less the vote that Romney got. But Hillary got, I believe the number was 6 million fewer votes than did Obama. So Trump didn't set the world on fire, but Hillary just did not generate the same excitement as did Obama.
It's a good letter. Stop putting down young people. I don't think we do. Listen to your own listener comment line from last week. So obviously, whoever this is.
That's something.
Good morning, panel. I was devastated with the outcome of the election. Trump is a racist and does not represent our country. However, it will make me, as a 53-year-old white woman, volunteer for organizations that will fight for what I believe in most a woman's right to choose. We cannot. Oh, I see. Believe in most a woman's right to choose. We cannot change the outcome, but we all need to defend our rights. So go out and volunteer. And by the way, I'm not so sure. Look, obviously, this was divided into not what Hillary said about people who voted for Trump, but intellectual, non-intellectual. Do I think that public radio is in a position where we could lose the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which gives us the money? Yeah, I do. And this letter is relevant here, because then you got a $7 million budget for WAMC. $500,000 of that comes from the feds and the state. And so the question would be, would people want the radio station enough to support it? In the case of this radio station, I say yes. And then the question becomes, will National Public Radio put even more pressure on the member stations, like this one, to give them even more money, which they're already beginning to do, and we give them a lot, approaching $1 million now. So will people begin to pick up the cudgels, as this letter suggests, for those institutions which are under attack?
1-800-323-9267.
Exactly. Dear panel, regarding Clinton's concession speech, I'm glad she decided to wait rather than speak at the Javits Center. It's important for us to respond and not just react now more than ever. And that's from Willow. And Jason says, it's been reported that 11,000 voters chose to write in Harambee. Who's hiring me? Oh, the gorilla that was shot in the zoo several months ago instead of choosing a real candidate. Does the panel interpret this as a protest to the candidates given or a lack of seriousness?
The former.
Both.
Yeah, both.
I wonder, says Karen, what percentage of the 20 million people who stand to lose their Obamacare under Trump presidency were those who voted Trump into office? I look forward to hearing Rich's perspective of that on Tuesday. Yeah, well, I'm going to break a lot of hearts here and say I don't remember Rich ever saying that he was going to vote for Trump.
No, he was. I'd have never met Rich, but I've heard him. And when last I heard him, he said he wasn't sure. He didn't want to commit to that.
Dear panel, I always enjoy hearing the panel made up of Alan, Rosemary, Libby, Joe, and Mike Spain. I don't feel the need for adding conservative voices to the program. I get a nice feeling of family from the discussion every time you have a conservative on. I'm disappointed by their comments, how they often just repeated lies about Hillary and tired conservative talking points. Thank you, and that's Ray. Well, Ray, I'll be honest with you. We love each other here. We do. And that goes on the Media Project most days. So today was contentious with Rex. Larry says, I'm listening to your show today and just heard anywhere outside of the urban areas as the hinterland, the boonies, et cetera. Maybe that's why there's so much distrust against the, quote, media. That's from Larry.
Yeah, I think this, I spoke about this yesterday. I think that this election revealed a huge divide that we tend to overlook, including the media, especially the media.
I don't think that's the point of
it. Well, he didn't like the language.
Wait, I know, but between rural and country areas.
Yeah.
Country areas.
Well, you know, I heard somebody, one of the left-wing reporters, referring to it as referring to rednecks. And he said, but that's what they call themselves. So, you know.
Well, Ira, I got to tell you something. You go to any religious or ethnic group, and they call themselves a lot of things,
and we're
expected to be able to live with that. But when somebody from the outside calls them that name, you know what you're going to get.
Yeah. You can understand that.
Yeah, sure.
But rural and urban areas and hinterland is—that's what it is from the city. So it's just saying,
changing the gist of the letter. The letter said, stop calling us names. That's basically what it said.
I'm trying to explain hinterland is not a name, no more than Gotham is for
even
the
boondocks,
city.
Short for boonies. Boondocks is a legitimate phrase.
Okay, Lillian says, where should we put our volunteer efforts, especially for those of us who have without any experience in law or the press? Well, there are a lot of places that need volunteers, really a lot of places. We use them here at WMC all the time. They answer the phones during Vox Pop. They help us during the fund drives. Immensely important. Julius, our old friend Julius, says, who appoints the federal attorneys for the states? I'm thinking of the future of PREPA-R. Now, Julius, as you probably know, Donald Trump, right before the election, announced that he would reappoint PREPA-R. When Hillary was asked, she said, too early to tell. And we do know that one of the things he was looking at, because he is an amazing man, was at the Clinton Foundation. So who knows whether that was what was on the table or not. But I think if he wants it, he can stay based on what Trump said.
And if Andrew Cuomo is not the subject of any legal action by Pete Barrero, do we look forward to Cuomo 2020 campaign?
Oh, I have knowing Cuomo as I do, I have no doubt that as he was sitting there now, he made a big concentrated effort to play nice in his announcements with the new president.
Cuomo did.
And believe me, presidents can have a great deal to do with whether you get subway money or not.
I was asking Rosemary at the break. Maybe it wasn't Rosemary, but anyway, with Trump Tower in New York City, how much money will President Trump cost the city of New York in extra protection, and how much, as he's there more frequently? I mean, Obama, we know what happens when a president comes to New York City, but it's not all that frequent.
I responded.
Yeah, so
I
you're going to go to Mar-a-Lago.
He'll be in Florida. Yeah. Where it's
well. You know, there was a really good piece on NPR this morning. I think it was NPR about his conflict of interest potential. He's letting his kids run his company. That's not exactly a blind trust. And also, there are going to be a lot of times when they pointed out specific conflicts of interest between what would be good for Trump And that is something that everybody has to keep their eye on.
Well, it must be lovely walking down beautiful Fifth Avenue these days and seeing a ring of garbage trucks around Trump Tower. Have you seen that?
No.
There are garbage trucks around town, all filled with sand. Apparently, it helps absorb an explosion. There's some security reason for it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Good morning, panel. I was watching the protests on CNN last night, and one of the panelists, Paul Begala, said 6 million registered Democrats did not vote on Tuesday. Wow.
Oh, it's got to be more than that.
Ladies and gentlemen, half the available population for voting do not vote in any presidential election. In this case, it was slightly more than half.
It was 46.9 who did not vote. And then the two primary candidates received about 50% each of the remaining vote, or about 25% of the eligible voters.
In the old Soviet Union, everybody voted.
Yeah.
They got a gun.
Right. Well, no, it'll change now when Vice President Putin gets involved.
Right. Vice President Putin. Paradoxically, Ivanka Trump is a convert to Judaism. Her husband is Jewish. They're raising Jewish children that are Donald's grandchildren. Yet anti-Semitism has been associated with the campaign.
That has been pointed out. Yeah.
Good morning. I understand that there are approximately 200 million registered voters. Clinton, I believe, received a bit over 42 million. Trump, less. Appears his overwhelming mandate that I heard someone say on NPR last night was around 25%. Am I missing something?
25% is right.
Yeah. No, but what is interesting is that every president, whether they win by 2 votes or 6 mm-hmm. votes, say, I have a mandate.
And had Hillary won, we would be saying the same thing if the margin was the same on the other side.
Croydon says, many are in need, but others are convinced through consumerism and Trump's rhetoric that they deserve more. Human nature strives for better, but perpetual discontent will destroy us and the environment. Certainly is possible.
We only have a minute, so I apologize. I often chide Rosemary for doing this, but I'm going to do the same thing, which is set off a grenade. But the question that I keep on hearing is about the Giuliani made some comments, I guess, yesterday about of prosecuting Hillary. And then there were statements made. Well, look, you know, there were same calls around George W. Bush when Obama took over, and they said we're not going to do that. We have to move forward, and hoping that this administration does the same thing. And then there was a note about pardoning Hillary Clinton. How do you pardon someone if they have not been charged with anything?
Right. Well, it can be done.
How does that work?
You just pardon them for all and any crimes that they may have committed. The problem with that is you're basically saying that they have committed you're implying they may have committed a crime.
She's not going to accept a pardon. She's not going to admit she did anything wrong.
But wait, Gerald Ford, didn't he pardon Nixon?
He did.
There was no indictment.
No. He pardoned Ford, and that's
no.
Why.
He didn't
no,
pardon
par-
Ford.
Ford,
Ford
pardoned
pardon,
yeah.
Nixon.
And you know why he did it? Because that was the deal, a lot of people think. And so what
ended what did he pardon
yeah,
for?
Yeah, but what did he pardon for? That's a great question.
Oh, yeah, no,
you
yeah.
know, what were there charges that were pending?
There was an impeachment, but that's not quite the same as a criminal indictment.
No, it's not.
So
it's not.
All right. Bomb scare over.
Okay.
We'll talk about it later.
There's garbage trucks around our building.
you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.